Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnistry Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to a very special episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. Folks, today is a day worthy of one to celebrate for. It is the fifth anniversary of the Boston Bastard Brigade. As the dude's equivalent of Electric Sisterhood, and we just about took that ball and ran with it as far as possible. In fact, you can say that we're still running. I know that there have been many changes in the past, and it's no lie that I am currently the sole contributor, but it's because of all of you that I still give it my all every week. On our podcasts, in our interviews, in our articles, and even when we're representing ourselves at some of the best cons in the world. And for those of you who have stuck with us all these years, since day one, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. So, to celebrate this anniversary, we're going to be doing a few things. For one, all of today's artists have been featured predominantly in some way or form on the Boston Bash Brigade website. Whether they've been reviewed, interviewed, or something else related to the past 5 years of our program. Second, all of our segments this week will be a top five list of some kind, ranging from my top films, anime, gaming, and music. Lastly, and here's the big one, we'll be giving away two PC Steam keys of 505 Games and Rebellion's newest title, Sniper Elite 3. I've been playing with the PS4 version of it, and thus far, I am enjoying every second of it. The tactics, the aiming, the precision, and those great moments when you shoot a guy and see his bones and muscles breaking apart. So, when will we give away the first key? Well, you gotta listen in to find out. So, let's get our 5-year anniversary really rolling, shall we? Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're gonna start things off with the Kings of Heavy Metal. I've seen these guys 3 times in concert, and we had the privilege of interviewing them back in 2012 during their tour with P-Lander Z. It's Electric Illshock, and from their masterpiece Beat Me, here's that fist pumper known as Scream For Me.
Hey!
One of my favorite songs from the band Chatmonchy, that was Hira 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 ko Himitsu no Tobira, taken from their 2009 album Kokuhaku. I talked about this specific release in our 11th episode of the Boston Bash Brigade, released in September of 2009. I really liked the album, though I did admit that Love is Soup was probably their dumbest song ever recorded. So, now comes our first top 5 list of the show, and I figured since we all love to be in a gaming mood, I'll count down our top 5 video games we've played since the creation of the Boston Bastard Brigade. Let's kick it off.
Number 5.
As soon as I graduated college, my first instinct was to get back into the gaming realm. But which console should I purchase? Well, Sega and Platinum Games made my decision much easier by releasing the Wii-exclusive Mad World. With its Sin City looks and over-the-top violence, not to mention some of the best motion controls done at the time, Mad World was a game built with high-quality gameplay, mixed in with some great commentary from comedian Greg Proops and the voice of Bender himself, John DiMaggio. It's a shame we didn't get an actual sequel for this. We got Anarchy Reigns, but it really wasn't the same. If you've never played Mad World, then you're stupid. I'm sorry, you're just an idiot. Teaming up Level 5 and Studio Ghibli was a match created in heaven, and Ni no Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch delivered with some of the most beautiful anime-based visuals seen in a video game. It also helped that its gameplay mechanics combined two of my all-time favorite RPGs, Pokemon and Tales of Symphonia. A great story that felt right out of the mind of Miyazaki, even though he had nothing to do with it, plus so many hours of great content and gorgeous gameplay, it was like getting a really long anime series created by the industry's best. If you haven't jumped into this game yet, then you are truly missing out on one of the most beautiful video games ever made.
Number 3.
When you first hear Charlie Brown and video game in one sentence, you may cringe, but Smart Bomb Interactive managed to create one of the greatest dogfighting games ever conceived with the Xbox Live Arcade exclusive Snoopy Flying Ace. While it was somewhat strange seeing the beloved Beagle in CG form, that feeling quickly went away thanks to its easy-to-follow control scheme, not to mention some solid multiplayer that had over a dozen planes fighting off one another in a fiery deathmatch. Snoopy Flying Ace proved that video game happiness truly is a warm puppy, especially one that flies high and is sup with camel.
Number 2.
It took almost 3 years for one man, Mr. Dean Dodrill, to create this game almost entirely on his own. The end result was a title that put many developers with a 100-fold team to shame. One of the greatest side-scrollers of all time, Dust and Elysian Tale brought players to a cel-shaded world that looked as good as any Don Bluth movie, along with some fantastic hack-and-slash mechanics and a story that felt straight out of an Oscar-nominated film. And you can't forget about Fidget, one of the best sidekick characters seen in any game, thanks to her fourth-wall-breaking dialogue and simple adorableness. Seriously, Dean, when are those Fidget dolls coming out anyway? If you're looking for an adventure with a capital A, then by all means, give Dust and Elysian Tale a whirl.
Number 1.
Good superhero-based video games were always hard to come by, but that all changed when Rocksteady got their hands on the Batman franchise. It started off on a high note with Arkham Asylum, but no one imagined how awe-inspiring its follow-up, Arkham City, would be. With a good chunk of Gotham as your playground, and almost every villain from the Batman universe, Arkham City taught both players and developers everywhere how to do a superhero game right. Of course, you can't talk about this game without mentioning Mark Hamill's final performance as the Joker, which will probably go down as his greatest contribution to the Batman lore. Plus sexy Catwoman. My god, if any woman out there can pull off that cosplay off perfectly, I'll be their slave during that entire con. Wait, did I just say that out loud? Getting back on topic, Batman Arkham City was the best game we've played these past 5 years, and hopefully, its upcoming follow-up, Arkham Knight, will continue on with its trend. Now, if you would like to share your comments on the best video games of the past 5 years, be sure to share them below in the comment section on the Boston Bastard Brigade page or on Facebook on facebook.com/Boston Bastard Brigade. Up next, we have a band who was the very first group we featured on our one-on-one podcast show, and that is The Clicks. It was a cold December evening at the Middle East downstairs, and we recorded the interview over at the Hi-Fi Pizza and Sub restaurant across the street, which is where we almost always do our interviews. Soon after the interview, the band heated up a club with their music and not only gave an amazing show, but also introduced me to another band that I'll touch on later in the show. From their album Black Tie Elevator, this is Dark Passenger.
Did I see the color red streaming down beside the bed? It's a lovely shade for you. Should I call you back again? Make you lover or a friend? Be loath for loving you. Then what will happen if I sin? Open doors to guide you in to the right seat. Should I let her? For if I open up the door, in the back seat you will go.
Do
Bees with Jewel Story from 2012's New Gravity album. That year, they took part on our one-on-one show shortly before the release of that record. They just released a new album called Resonance Love this past April, so be sure to give that one a spin too. So now we're going to count down the top five films of the past 5 years. These are all the movies we chatted about and couldn't help but fall in love with for all of that time. Let's get it rolling with number five.
Number five.
It's been many decades since we got a good silent movie. In fact, probably the last one that was wrapped up nicely for us to open was Silent Movie, Mel Brooks' comedic farce on the whole genre. Luckily, we were treated to another great one in 2011 with The Artist, with Jean Dujardin as a silent movie actor swept under the rug in favor of talking pictures. His life flushes into a downward spiral, while the woman he met on the red carpet keeps being shot into the stars. With its great story and homage to the films of old, The Artist was a movie that made us laugh, cry, and cheer for the sole reason of it being a damn good film. One of the very few movies these last few years that deserved all the Oscar gold it received. When it comes to Wes Anderson, his style is quite unmatched. Coming off as community theater productions put on the big screen, the director manages to make even the smallest details feel so whimsical. It wasn't until 2012's Moonrise Kingdom, however, when his craft met the perfection he was carving away for the past decade and a half. A young boy falls in love with a girl, and they do everything they can to be together. Fortunately, it doesn't drop into that whole woe-is-me shtick that Shakespeare likes to jerk off to, but instead plays around with the characters thanks to some witty dialogue, a great ensemble, and one of the funniest chase sequences seen in a film climax in years. Don't be afraid of the strange humor, but instead embrace what Moonrise Kingdom delivers with all your might.
Number three.
There have been tons of World War II films made since the damn battle was still going on, but it took Quentin Tarantino to fill one with dynamic tension, memorable characters, and a phenomenal ending that had moviegoers everywhere on their feet cheering. That's Inglourious Basterds in a nutshell. And wow, does it still take my breath away every time I watch it. Christoph Waltz's turn as Hans Landa was one for the history books, with him becoming a household name overnight. Add in Brad Pitt as the leader of the Bastards, and you've got a popcorn flick that will make you go from happy face to frowny face faster than a schizophrenic patient. Plus, we got to see how Hitler should have died. If you've never sat yourself down to watch Inglourious Basterds, then you're not as patriotic as you think you are.
Number two.
I have yet to see a film that has ever come close to capturing the atmosphere of Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive. With Ryan Gosling as the nameless man behind the wheel, the film starts off with a great car chase, only to then spend the next 30 minutes developing the characters in a wonderfully surreal way. Then, when the next heist comes around, it's a total what-the-fuck smorgasbord that has your brain spinning at the speed of sound. Bryan Cranston shines as the driver's mechanic friend Shannon, but no one could compete with Albert Brooks as Bernie with the coldness and sincerity that he delivered throughout the film. Seriously, he got snubbed during Oscar awards season, one of the biggest travesties in the movie world. It's not a film for everyone, but do at least give Drive a viewing, and I'm certain it won't be the only time your eyes gaze at it.
Number one.
So, even after all the boasting I gave to Drive, what's one film that's even better than that? Well, how about a film from the director of Shaun of the Dead, based off of the comic by Brian Lee O'Malley, and with an all-star cast fronted surprisingly well by Michael Cera. That's Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, a movie that isn't just a love letter to video games and rock and roll, but also shows off what it means to be in this generation than any other film these last 5 years. I might even go so far as to call it The Clerks of the 2010s. Mind you, we never saw Dante and Randall beating up evil ex-boyfriends, but the overall sense of our generation's mentality is quite comparable to that of the ones of the 1990s. Great fights, stupendous humor, and some of the best music in a film soundtrack, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World was a true tour de force that you can watch over and over again. In fact, I think I've literally watched that movie over 100 times since I bought it. Although it might not have done well in the box office, I'm certain that it has inspired millions of men and women out there to find their Ramona Flowers. that special someone they fight and aren't to be together with. You know what? I think it's time to give away our first Sniper Elite 3 Steam Key. So get your pens, paper, Word or Pages document, or even jump onto your Steam application right this very moment. Go to activate a product on Steam and type this code in. Remember, all capital letters. I'll give you a moment to prepare. Ready? Okay, here's the first code. 4YBZV9TMXNLL4L. If you got the code, be sure to brag about it on either our official website or on our Facebook page. If it wasn't for this band, I probably wouldn't be sitting here with a mic in my face right now. Here are the Pillows, and this song in particular that I will be spinning is a track they first premiered in America during their 2007 US tour. From Wake Up, Wake Up, Wake Up, this is Propose.
Have it your way, we'll have the answer.
Doesn't Matter Much off of their Box of Secrets album. I first heard this band in the film Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and have been a massive fan of them ever since. Back in 2010, I had a chance to interview the duo separately when they played the great Scott in Alston, where they both said their most favorite place to perform was Japan. I wonder if that answer has changed since then. You know, I was trying to think of something music-related for this top 5 list, and seeing as we do an albums list at the end of every year, it'd be best not to do that. So then I thought, hey, I go to a lot of concerts, and I report on that, so why don't I do my top 5 concerts of the last 5 years? And that's what I'm gonna do right now.
Number 5.
3 years ago, in a sweaty club called Church, the legends known as Guitar Wolf took the stage and bolted away with it. For almost 2 hours, the band ran through their biggest hits, from Jet Generation to Wild Zero, even throwing in a couple tracks from their newest album at the time, Space Battleship Love. The highlight of the show came during High Schooler Action, when Seiji pulled up a bunch of audience members, built a pyramid out of them, and then sat proudly on top. It would also be the last time in a while I'd take part in a mosh pit, as I got slammed spine first into a table. Nevertheless, the Japanese punk rockabilly heroes left Boston with plenty of battle scars and hickeys, with high hopes that they'll one day return to the scene of the crime.
Number 4.
It's no secret that Frank Turner puts on a great show. What I didn't expect was him bringing along a couple of opening acts that also know how to get the party going at this past November's House of Blues gig. This would be the night I was introduced to now friends of the show, Cuckoo Kangaroo, who rapped about PBJs without crust, speaking whale, cat parties, and friendship bracelets. When Turner joined them on stage for Awesome Rainbows, the place went beyond nuts. Then came the Smith Street Band, a group of Aussies who provided the perfect in-betweener with their rocking tracks and reminding everyone to never let anyone fuck with their dreams. Finally, the man of the hour came onto stage, acting lively and getting the crowd to sing along with no problem whatsoever. Even with bad back and all, Mr. Turner was ever so energetic, performing songs from all of his albums and paying special attention to his recent release, Tape Deck Heart, which was number 3 on my top albums list last year. By the end, everyone was in a celebratory mood, with Cuckoo Kangaroo bringing out a piñata and everyone dancing about. This is how to do a fun gig.
Number 3.
Anticipation ran high for a little band formed by Josh Homme, Dave Grohl, and John Paul Jones. Their album hadn't even hit stores, but only small audio clips and whatever live video could be found only gave hints to what them Crooked Vultures was all about. The energy was already at 11 just as the first pluck of the guitar string echoed through the House of Blues. Elephants, Scumbag Blues, Gunmen, and other songs that would be featured in their first LP. The trio, along with Alan Johannes, rocked the night away, showing that the hype should be believed in 100%.
Number 2.
Frank Turner may do an amazingly fun show, but when it comes to the most exciting concert, you gotta go with Rammstein. They returned to Worcester over a decade after the band got arrested for their squirting realistic dildo. By the end of the night, everything was on fire, the audience was covered in foam, and the band was drenched in sweat. And the whole arena loved it. Till Lindemann continues to have the most beautiful and haunting voice in the music world, and that night proved why. What else can I say except anyone who wants to see a great show should see Rammstein. Truly, one of the greatest acts to step foot on this planet.
Number 1.
As a kid, I loved Pink Floyd's The Wall. But considering that the band at the time lacked Roger Waters, I knew that chances of seeing The Wall live would probably never happen. Well, my despair quickly vanished when Waters announced a Wall tour, and when it came to the TD Garden in 2010, it was everything I hoped it could be. The puppets, the animation, the building, and the collapsing of the wall itself. To be able to finally see the show that I've wanted to see as a kid, and totally deliver in the way it did, that's what we call not just a truly memorable show, but a great experience one can have in life itself. If you missed that tour, then you truly missed one of the greatest rock spectacles ever conceived. Have a favorite concert experience you'd like to share? Be sure to post below in our comment section or post at facebook.com/Boston Bastard Brigade. Here's a band that have taken the Album of the Year crown twice in our lifetime. The first in 2009 for Hymn to the Immortal Wind, and the second in 2012 for their beautiful For My Parents LP. It's Mono, and I was contemplating how I can play one of their songs when they are always so dang long, but considering how beautiful these songs are, I can't help but spin one from start to finish. So sit back and close your eyes as you listen to this cut from My Parents. This is Dream Odyssey.
Thank you.
Hayate no Gotoku, the first opening theme to Hayate the Combat Butler, my all-time favorite anime comedy series. I talked about the second season of this anime back in 2009, and I also chatted a little bit about the third season later on in 2012. Now, speaking of anime, let's list our top five anime series of the last 5 years. Hold on. You know what? Let's make this a little bit more interesting. You know what? How about we do the top 5 anime English dubs of the last 5 years? Yeah, that'd be perfect. So let's get the countdown going with number 5.
Number 5.
If you want a truly underrated English dub, then look no further than Funimation's version of Princess Jellyfish. Josh Greel completely owns his role as Kurenosuke, who may be the coolest cross-dresser since, well, there's really any comparison. Maxi Whitehead Tsukimi tackles her shyness with a touch of realism, with her coming out of her shell ever so gracefully as the show progresses. Huge props to Jerry Russell as Kuranosuke's uncle Negishi, whose appearance every time on screen practically steals the show. These days, it's really hard to find Princess Jellyfish on DVD, with some box sets going for as high as like $170. So, if you don't want to spend all that dough to hear a fantastic dub, just go onto Netflix. I'm sure Claire will be very happy if you do.
No, wait. I just wanted him to transfer that jellyfish to a different tank, because if he doesn't soon, it'll die.
Die, you say?
Yes, die!
Why don't you just take it? Huh? Give us that one. Hop to, shop boy. What's the problem?
Well, you see, my boss...
You can just tell him the poor thing died earlier. If you don't do something, that's what'll happen anyway. Right? You said that it would die soon? This jelly thing?
Huh? Yes, it'll die. It's already dead, if that helps!
The only non-Funimation dub on my list, the English version of Dorarara, had a cast that wasn't just great, but one that was just as energetic and lively as its Japanese counterpart. Because of its giant ensemble, and since the episodes tend to focus on different people each week, there needed to be real talent to bring these characters their own personal spotlight. Kari Walgren as the Headless Celtie, Darrell Gulbo as Mikado, the secret founder of the Dollars, and Bryce Papenbrook as his pal Masaomi helped to piece together a mystery of the Ikebukuro surroundings. But it was Johnny Young Bosch's Isaiah that glued it all together. Extra points to Crispin Freeman as the insanely strong Shizuo, and Patrick Seitz's sushi worker Simone. It's a truly wonderful dub, but sadly the only way to watch it is to fork over that Aniplex USA cash. Oh well, maybe with the second season coming soon, they can announce a cool sale for it.
Didn't I tell you never to set foot in Ikebukuro again? You remember that, Isaiah, don't ya?
Shizu-chan, last I heard you had some gig working over by the West Gate.
Got fired ages ago, and I'm pretty sure that I've told you never to call me that. My name's Shizuo Heiwajima. Try to get it right.
Shizuo Heiwajima? That's the other guy I'm absolutely not to piss off.
Oh, come on, Shizu-chan. So I pinned you for something you didn't do. Who knew you'd get so mad?
Oh, I'm not mad. I just want to beat the shit out of you.
You know, the problem with you, Shizu-chan, is that you can't be swayed by reason, and that's bad. Really bad. Now let me go.
Number 3. My Bride is a Mermaid, or Seto no Hana Yome as it's known in Japan, was already one of the funniest anime series I've ever seen. So when it got licensed, I hoped that they could find at least a decent enough cast for it. What I got was one that went above and beyond the Japanese version. Tom Haverkorn as the dope that got to marry Alexis Tipton's mermaid Yakuza daughter, with John Swayze as the batshit crazy father. Adding Chris Sabat as the suave ladies' man Masa, and Monica Rial, who even bumped up the insanity for Maki. It's one of the funniest dubs to put on tape, and definitely a great series to show to even those who aren't really into anime. Believe me, I've converted a lot of people to Japanese animation when I showed them this show. So if you want people to get into anime, show them My Bride is a Mermaid. They will become fans very quickly.
Hey, over here, Nagasumi! Candied apple!
Wow, that thing is huge!
It's delicious!
And here's yours, kid.
Thank you, sir. Hey, what the... Excuse me, sir, it seems somebody already...
You telling me you got a problem or something, punk?
No, sir.
Oh, Nagasumi! Chocolate banana!
Awesome, I love bananas!
Now that's delicious.
Here you go, made just for you.
Ah, great, thanks a lot. I need to calm down. It doesn't matter what I eat, as long as I'm eating it with sun.
Bang, bang!
That's gonna be some kind of health code violation. Who knows where that gun's been? Are you freaking crazy? I almost blew my brains out just now.
Are you trying to complain about my service, you punk?
No,
answer.
Number two.
The show that made J. Michael Tatum and Brina Palencia the anime power couple, Spice and Wolf had the advantage of taking place in a very English realm. What made the dub stand out so much was its performance to not just voice acting levels, but even Shakespearean. It's one of the rare times I watched an English dub and have walked away from it with even more respect for the material than I did with the Japanese version. And it's a show about the trade industry during the Renaissance period. I mean, how can it be this interesting? Simple. By having some really talented actors behind the mic delivering their lines with much gusto. It may not have the highest respect within the anime community right now, but in due time, the dub for Spice and Wolf will surely go down as one of this generation's best.
Finally, you have come back to me.
Why didn't you tell me that you weren't feeling well?
Well, I...
You're not a child. Don't tell me you didn't notice until you fainted. Thank God we were here. What would we have done if this happened to you while we were traveling? I know you may find it hard to understand, but if you fall sick in a forest or a wasteland, you could die. You scared the hell out of me, you know?
I am sorry.
How are you feeling now? Any better?
I am fine. I believe the exhaustion has caught up with me.
So, it's not a special disease or anything?
Do not worry.
Oh, good. Thank God. I feel like I can breathe now.
You are good at overreacting.
Yeah, thanks.
Number one.
No other show has made me marathon through a plethora of episodes in such insane lengths like I did with Fairy Tail. With Chirami Lei as Lucy and Top Abercorn as Natsu, the two main characters act as the brain and brawn for the series. The rest of the main crew, Tia Ballard as the adorable Happy, Newton Pittman as Gray, and Colleen Clinkbeard as Urza. These guys truly make their roles their own in such a way that I can't even watch the original Japanese version anymore. And considering how big a fan I am of both Aya Hirano and Rie Kugimiya, that really says something. I'm actually surprised Adult Swim hasn't picked this show up yet, honestly, as it'd be perfect for the Toonami lineup. Well, Bleach is ending soon, so they can easily put it there when it's over. If you haven't watched Fairy Tail yet, you are definitely losing out to not just the best dub of the last 5 years, but possibly one of the best series to come out of Japan.
Wow!
Well, this is a surprise.
They finished building it?
There it is, Fairy Tail's new guild hall. Are you kidding me? We've got a cafe now?
Do we really need a gift shop too?
Hey there, glad you guys made it back okay. What's new?
They got you work in the gift shop, Max? It's been a while since we've seen you around the guild.
Well, Master made me go back to school because he wanted me to take some business
classes. You're Max Dolores. I've read all about you in Sorcerer Weekly.
Yes, ma'am. That'd be me. And you know, I've heard a lot about you, Lucy.
I don't want to think about the crazy things they probably told you.
So what kind of stuff are you selling here?
We've got t-shirts, wristbands, mugs, towels, and of course, there's our most popular item.
Wow, a Lucy action figure.
Nobody ever asked me if I was cool with that.
She's posable, and her clothes come off.
Of course her clothes pop off. It wouldn't be right if it didn't. That was my list of my top five favorite English dubs of the last 5 years. If you don't like it, well, share your thoughts below on our comments section of our Boston Bastard Brigade page, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Boston Bastard Brigade. Now let's go back to some music. Back in 2009, I was introduced to a band called Hunter Valentine via their opening slot before The Clicks. Since that era, they've become quite the friends to the Boston Bastard Brigade realm and one of the coolest acts we've hung out with. Here's a track from the Lessons from the Late Night album, which I called back in 2010, raw and unapologetic as hell. This is The Stalker.
Dance in the light, and I hope that I'm not.
With Tetsu no Hikigane, a B-side from their Money, Money, Money single. Back in 2010, I gave a 5-star review for their album, The World Is Mine, which also landed at number 3 on my top albums list that year, behind Apocalyptica and Kanye West. Well, that about wraps up this 5-year anniversary show. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com. And on Twitter at king_baby_duck. You can like us on facebook.com/Boston Bass Brigade. And for all the other shows under the Land of Esh, you can find the Electric Sisterhood at electricsisterhood.com. You can find Geek Aggro at geekaggro.com. And you can also find Issues Program at issuesprogram.com. Before we finish up here, we have one more Steam key of Sniper Elite 3 to give away. You guys all ready? Here it comes. 4-8-W-Q-T 4-C-B-8-J-B-B-N-C-H. Remember, all capital letters. So, that's it. We are ending today's episode with another band that helped kickstart my love for the Japanese music scene. It's Puffy, and this is a song that was only available on the Japanese version of their 2006 album, Splurge. It's an awesome rendition of that Green Day classic, Basket Case. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck. Thanking you once again for sticking by us these past 5 years. And hoping you stick around for when we reach our 10th anniversary. Sign out, bitches.
Do you have the time to listen to me? Why? Have an essay and everything all at once.
one of those melodies.